was the podcast about?
It was called Healthcare Goals. So I had a health tech startup in 2018. The premise of it was we would interview innovators or, you know, startup founders in the health technology space who were trying to do something, you know, innovative or different.
Okay.
And every episode we'd find somebody with a rare disease that had a GoFundMe, or sometimes we'd make someone GoFundMe, and we'd, you know, promote, you know, fundraising through the episode, and we'd interview somebody and talk about, you know, what they were doing in the field, and it's some pretty cool interviews.
That's awesome. How did you get into that?
So I was actually my grandma's caregiver.
Okay.
And she, you know, she had dementia. She had a lot of different specialists. So we'd get a call from a nephrologist. And they'd be like, hey, she can't be on this heart medication.
A nephrologist?
The kidney doctor.
Okay. They'd say never heard that before.
Yeah. Nephrology is the study of kidney health.
Okay.
But so we'd get a call from one of her specialists. And they'd say, hey, this medicine that the other specialist just diagnosed her conflicts with something that she's on. This is going to kill her if we don't get her off of it.
Right.
I'd be like, she's been on it for 2 weeks already. And it was really frustrating, you know, dealing with stuff like that, or going to one office and they don't have any of her records and they can't read them because they have a different vendor. And I'm a bit of a geek, so I started looking into it. Come to find out, there's this big issue in healthcare called interoperability. And basically, the health systems don't like to talk to each other because the companies that own these health record systems consider the data theirs. Now, it's anonymized when they sell it, but it can easily be retraced back to you.
Right.
But the bigger players are like Epic Systems and Cerner, and they don't want their data, their health systems, talking to each other.
Okay.
It's a conflict of interest. So they try and make it as hard as possible. And I mean, that's just grotesque to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, dealing with that with my grandma, I started looking more into the healthcare field. And, you know, I wanted to found a company to make a bit of a difference to try and change that.
Yeah.
And I was at it for a few years and I never got any funding, but I was getting revenue. I was actually doing, it was data. Basically, there's this company called Scientific Clinics out of Indiana, owned by a guy named Mark Plaskow.
Okay.
And they'd be looking for certain data sets. And it was data procurement is the service I was doing for him. You'd say, he approached me thinking I had data to sell. And I was like, well, we don't have any yet.
Right.
We're still trying to get there. And he told me, he's like, if you can find data, you know, I'll give you 10, 20% of the data set cost. So I'd go out and I'd find data sets through the all payer claims database, the APCD. Every state has one.
Okay.
Everybody who has government funded healthcare, like Medicaid, all their data winds up on the all payer claims database, and it's anonymized. But you know, I'd go and I'd find if they were looking for a certain health set. The program he was working on was basically trying to reduce malpractice at hospitals. So it would go, okay, this person is, you know, prepping for this surgery, but you guys need to pre-screen them for these three things. Or, you know, you're putting them on this medication, make sure they don't have this ailment or this disease, right, to lower malpractice. Because, you know, hospitals, the figure was skewed a lot because if you're going into a hospital, you already have health issues. But they said like hospitals were like the number one cause of death in America, which you're going to hospital because you need,
right,
it could be life or death already.
Right.
But there was some truth to that statistic where hospitals, you know, they miss things. They're very fast paced environments.
Right.
Mistakes can happen. And a mistake in that environment is can be very detrimental to,
right,
to human health and life.
Yeah, it's so interesting you bring that up because my sister is a nurse, and when she was going through school and she was going through all of her stuff, and I've talked to doctors about this too, like there's almost a sense of pride about like doing a 24-hour shift and only sleeping for like 3 hours of it. And after, you know, doing my research about like the importance of sleep and how 2 hours of missed sleep can have these compounding effects, it is wild to me that the one industry where you're literally responsible for saving lives and like little mistakes can kill people, that there's some sense of pride about being sleep deprived. I don't know how to shift the culture there. I don't know if there is a way to shift the culture, but like, it seems like it's such a disservice, not only to the employees, but also to the patients.
Well, it's a multifaceted issue. You know, burnout, healthcare is one of the worst industries for burnout, suicide, It's very high for you know, healthcare workers. But I think that it's mainly a logistics issue. You know, America has less doctors per capita than the rest of the industrialized world. We're like at the tail end. We have like third world statistic rates on that.
I had no idea.
We are deploying a lot of people into the healthcare workforce, you know, over the next, by 2030.
Right.
The majority of jobs being created are healthcare related. But yeah, we're very underserved in that sense. So right. Medical staff are very overworked, and it's a really, really tricky, topic to address. And there's some people that do it. There's a guy in Pensacola, his name's Quint Studer. He has like a medical consulting firm, and since the 80s, he's like gone into hospitals that are about to shut down and turn them around and make them like, you know, profitable and have like better turnouts on surgeries and things like that.
I forget where I was listening to it. It was a podcast somewhere where they were talking about kind of the founder of the regiment that new doctors go through, you know what I mean, when they're doing all the clinical stuff. After like his career was over, it was kind of came out that he was a cokehead, and it would just be like, so he would go on these 48-hour benders where he could stay up and just go, and then that was his expectation for all of his students up and coming through the industry. It was like, well, I can do 48 hours, so should you. I don't think he was sharing with everyone that he was, you know, taking bumps every time he was going in the medical room, and then that was kind of fueling that. But then that standard kind of continued on of like, you know, and again, this could be partially inaccurate information, but that was my understanding that standard continued on of like, okay, well, you got to be able to do these ridiculous long, you know, lengthy stints. But yeah, I mean, that's too bad. I mean, hopefully it gets fixed. Hopefully it gets better, because that's such an important thing.
Yeah, I think it will. You know, like there's a lot of jobs being created in the healthcare industry. We're taking a lot of people from other countries to fill those spaces too. And yeah, living up to standards, and you being in the military, I'm sure you're really familiar with that. Like, I've heard of, was the guy, his nickname was McNasty, but he was a World War II PJ. And I guess he was raiding buildings, and he was hungry. He found some eggs, and when he's raiding these buildings, his number one priority was not to crack any of the eggs. And so he's going through buildings clearing when he's worried about the eggs in his pocket.
Yeah.
And,
priorities, right?
Yeah. But you hear those stories, and you know, whether it's military or healthcare, and how hard some people go, and you got to live up to those standards. And, also, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you know, methamphetamines and cocaine, it was almost professional to do work.
Right.
You know? And the whole culture on work and everything is, we're still living up to a lot of those standards that are outdated, you know, back when they were still making children work in factories and stuff.
Right. Well, it seems like it's getting better now. So you're not doing that anymore?
Yes and no. So, you know,
I know when we talked, you were like, I have like 8 jobs. So like, that sounds like it's still one of them, right? What else are you doing?
So, well, I stepped away from it a little bit because there's a lot of red tape in healthcare. It's very expensive just to be audited, to be HIPAA compliant alone.
Right.
And then the HIPAA insurance and all that stuff to work in the health tech field and have technology that's compliant is just so expensive. And I was pitching investors for years and always hearing, you know, it's just too much risk. You know, most of the companies that come into here don't do anything. And then there was a lot of companies that were very similar to me that were getting funding. There was one company that got $5 million in funding and gave up after a year because it was too difficult for them. And they were all like health IT vets,
right?
People that work for like ICFIA and the world's largest data brokers. So after a few years, I was like, I'm just playing tennis against a wall right now, you know? So I took a few steps back, and I'm actually kind of rebranding it so that it's not healthcare focused. Now, we definitely want to get into healthcare data, but that's end game. Whereas the initial market entrance is consumer data, financial data, information that's a lot less sensitive and easier to work with and manage, less costly. So I'm probably going to be announcing the relaunch spring of next year.
Cool.
Yeah, besides that, you know, I got my start in entrepreneurship. Being my grandma's caregiver, I was like throwing newspapers at night to get her to all her doctor's appointments throughout the day.
Was that here locally?
Yeah, actually in Niceville.
Okay,
nice. Yeah, so I was doing Northwest Florida Daily News, and then they do some other like magazines and stuff on like Sundays.
Yeah.
You know, I've got two kids, and it was a lot doing the newspaper. So I was like, you know, what can I do? I can balance being a caregiver and, you know, have a career. And I looked into catering. So I got in 2017, I got a catering tent, some tables, and, you know, I've always liked making barbecue. So I started up a barbecue catering company, and from 2017 to 2020, I did that. COVID came, shut down all my contracts, all my caterings. I was like, what do I do? There were some loopholes, like restaurants were putting people outside,
yeah. They
were putting tents up and putting people out in the parking lots,
yeah.
So they could feed them. And then it was either that or food trucking. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get a food truck. And I got a little food truck, actually, you know, Basil and Baxter's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was their old truck. So I bought their old truck because they started with the truck before they had the brick and mortar.
Gotcha.
So I bought their old truck from them.
I still haven't been there. I've driven by it a bunch and I'm like, oh, they have like a good brunch, I guess. It's supposed to be really good.
Their dinner's really good, like shrimp and grits, okay. And their steaks, and they're really, really good.
Shout out to Basil and Baxter's.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so I bought their old truck. That was my first truck. And I did that for 2 years, and then, you know, I wanted to upgrade, so.
What kind of food?
Barbecue.
Okay.
So I did.
You said that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I did. It was Soul Foods barbecue. It was American and Korean barbecue fusion, like a play on words, like Seoul, Korea, Seoul, but Seoul, like American soul food.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, we'd do bulgogi nachos and, you know, regular hot dogs, but Korean corn dogs, and, you know, I'd do... spicy chicken, like bulldog sandwiches. So it was, you know, good combination of American and Korean barbecue fusion. People really liked it. I got mentioned in, when I went out to Gulf Breeze, got mentioned in, Pensacola magazine's, you know, best local barbecue edition. So people really liked it. And, then I moved that to Shalimar. And was doing that for a while, and it's a lot of hours. Food trucking is a lot of work. People don't, like, everyone's like, oh, I'll start up a food truck.
Right.
You're working 100-hour weeks minimum.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I told Pensacola Magazine when they interviewed me on it, it wasn't that, it was P&J, I'm working 100-plus hours, and they're like, oh, we don't want to say you're doing all that. I was like, what do you mean? They said I was doing 60 hours.
Right.
When I told them I was getting out of it, and I was like, y'all said I'm quitting for 60-hour weeks?
Yeah.
Like, don't say that. But anyways, I mean, some weeks I was working 120 hours. And
I got a few friends that do food trucking, too, and it's all the buying the food, buying the equipment, getting everything ordered, advertising for events, prepping. And then you go work for, what, 4 or 6 hours for your event. You get back, you got to clean the truck, you got to get ready to go for the next day. And it's usually 1 to 4 people, you know,
it's a small family.
Right. It's a small family, but you're trying to run all the logistics of a mobile business plus a restaurant plus, you know, it's a lot.
And my margins in 2017, tent catering were higher than they are now. The food industry has just really changed, especially after COVID.
Yeah.
The food costs are just so high. I mean, restaurants are closing left and right. You know, I mean, and not just any old mom and pop shop. There's like established franchises like TGI Fridays, the one here in Fort Walton, and the one in Panama City both closed. The oldest barbecue place in Fort Walton closed last year. But it was a lot. You know, I'd do good for a couple weeks, and then weather wouldn't be good for a week or two, and I'd be hurting again.
Yeah.
I didn't like the inconsistency of it. So, I'd been talking to some friends that wanted to get into food trucking, and they were talking about buying the truck from me. I was actually borrowing their vehicle to go to a catering in Crestview with a whiskey bar. I got the car in an accident.
It was a nice
Mazda SUV, like a $50,000 SUV.
Yeah.
And I just gave them the truck. I felt so bad about it. I was like, y'all, just take the food truck. You know, I'll stay on as a partner. You know, and they built Beachy Queen. So that's, you know, the Oasis in Shalimar.
Okay.
But and I manage that food truck course. I do their events and the graphics for the big billboard outside, and I do their Facebook page and stuff. But yeah, so I stepped back and they took over the truck, and it's, you know, Beachy Queen now, not Soul Foods Barbecue anymore, but I think Beachy Queen sounds a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then I think it complements our area a little bit more. But we're trying to franchise that out. So, you know, they've got this one truck and they're trying to do a second truck here soon and expand it out. And maybe eventually, hopefully by the end of next year, might be the first brick and mortar.
Nice.
But yeah, and it's a good menu, great margins, super simple. So, you know, from 2017 from catering, went from that to food trucking, and now I'm, you know, managing food truck court. And, so we're doing a gallery night. You know, we do gallery nights first Friday of every month. So it's like on Friday the 3rd.
Yeah.
We're doing gallery night. We've got some local artists coming to display their wares.
Where's that at?
It's at the Oasis in Shalimar. So it's right between the Waffle House and the Tum Thumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Cool. We've been butting heads a little bit with Waffle House, which I'm surprised. they had sent corporate down to come harass us and tell us that we can't have our customers park in their parking lot. And it's like, we don't tell people to park over there. They just do, and they park over. So we've told all our customers, like, hey, don't park over there.
Which surprises me that a business doesn't want, I mean, I know you don't want the parking lot eaten up, but it's not like Waffle House is like a staple of Shalimar that's just full all the time.
Yeah. The parking lots, sometimes it's full. It's usually like Sunday mornings. And I don't think any of our trucks are even open Sunday morning. I think that we have a fruit truck that I think actually is open Sunday mornings now. They're on the other side of the building. You can't even see them from the Waffle House parking lot. But we see all the memes about like the Waffle House employees can fight.
You know?
So we're trying to watch our P's and Q's with them.
It's fair. Is that part of the training for Waffle House now? It's like, hey, you gotta have to fend from flying chairs, and that's awesome.
Yeah, they bring Chuck Liddell in there and train him.
Exactly. All right, so you said you're currently still doing that, you're still managing the food truck or okay.
Yeah, so I'm doing that, managing the Oasis. I do social media management and marketing and advertising for Fight TV. So their owner lives actually out in Gulf Breeze. But they've got, their promotion is mainly out of Mexico. They have a lot of professional, Mexican fighters, MMA fighters and boxers. But they also, you know, partner with promotions around North America and, you know, will stream their promotions. And I think right now it's like $2 a month you can pay and you get access to all these promotions.
Good.
I mean, they're great fighters. We're actually going to be, putting, Joe Riggs, you know, who Joe Riggs is.
Heard of him.
And yeah, he's going to be going out to Mexico and fighting some very high ranked Mexican boxers.
Nice.
And he was in, you know, UFC, and he was in Strikeforce and legit dude. So, you know, I do work for Fight TV. I've been taking on a lot of local clients. Like there's, you know, David and Family Tree Service, you know, built their logo, built their website, managed their social page, been helping them. They are mainly out in, you know, the Bonifay area, mm-hmm. and I've been trying to help them expand out in like Destin, Santa Rosa Beach. So been getting them clients out there. I've got a motocross athlete, Charles Jaghab, just built his website, and we're throwing him up a store right now, you know, the regular motocross apparel. He's wanting to do courses to like teach people how to get into motocross.
So okay.
We're working on a course system for him to sell. So helping him build a course system. And then that's one of my company's business goals group. And that's one of the things that I kind of want to do is start business courses. So I'm working with a few people right now. Like one guy out in Panama City, JQ's Mobile Detailing. He's an auto detailer. He started with just a pickup truck, and now he's getting a van and he's getting wrapped and everything. And we're working on a course for how to get into, you know, auto detailing, and I'm doing one for catering, and we're going to be releasing that around the end of December, a few of these courses, and then probably every month or two we'll be stacking on another course. It's one of the things that I'm wanting to do with Business Goals Group is, you know, business courses, how to find an easy to scale business and
you
know, proven model. And
nice. That's awesome. I'll have to, I'll be in touch with you, but we run a pretty big homeschool group. My wife and I do locally. So there's about 900 members. I don't know if all of them, you know, are homeschool families, but there's a good amount of homeschool families, and it's aimed at Okaloosa County, but it stretches out into kind of Santa Rosa and Walton and Bay County even a little bit too. But spring-ish next year, I don't know if we have an exact date, we want to do kind of like a science fair for kids, right? But we want to do an entrepreneur fair, basically.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're going to have the kids, you know, we'll lay out a business plan for the kids of like, hey, this is what a good business plan should look like. Here's your template. Like, what do you want to do? What business do you want? You want to be a YouTuber? Great. Like, write a business plan for it. What's the page going to be? You know, and kind of get those models down just to get them in that entrepreneurial mindset and away from, especially from the home school community, I think it's a little more open-minded about that stuff. School's very much like, okay, you show up to school, then you show up to work. You know, you show up to school, then college, then work. And it's kind of like more of a path laid out. But we want to do something like that for the kids. And ideally, you know, have it be an annual thing of like, hey, here's your model. And then I don't know if we would, you know, at some point do grants for the older kids if they want to try and actually, you know, if they're 16 and they want to start a business, like, cool, we'll give you a grant, you know, whoever the first place winner is or something like that. But
yeah. So definitely. I'd love to be involved in that and get my kids in that. So, you know, my kids, Grayson and Nova, they were homeschooled. This is their first year going to public school. But before COVID, they did it in Niceville at the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. They did a kids business convention, you know, thing where business fair. And my son wanted to, I was a caterer at the time, so that's what he wanted to do. So okay. I was like, all right, well, yeah, that's easy. So he set up a tent and he told me everything he wanted to make. He wanted to do superhero themed baked treats. So nice. We did like Spider-Man brownies and Hulk Rice Krispies. And
yeah,
and that was a lot of fun for all the kids. Loved it.
That's
and
cool.
You could tell afterwards, they were like, oh, I want my own business.
Yeah.
They were all excited. Yeah, so I'd love to get my kids in that. If y'all know about that, I'd love to help any way possible.
Yeah, we'll let you know for sure. I know we just did a homeschool science fair at the Emerald Coast Science Center, and they did a really good job. And they had a couple of local people come in, and they were judges and gave out prizes and stuff too. So I want to kind of give the kids incentive to not only develop their product and like actually sell it. You know, I mean, we want to have like, hey, you get to sell your stuff, and then everyone will come in and kind of figure it out. But also like, hey, you had the best one. So we'll have some people who are, I want all local entrepreneurs who have been successful in starting a business coming through and, you know, gauging these business plans of just like, hey, who threw something together, whose mom and dad did it for them, and who actually like put the time in to kind of to make something cool and, you know, what they want to do. So yeah, it'll be fun. We'll let you know for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd love to be involved in that. It's, yeah, you're right. Public schools, it's like they don't even like to push trades. It's like they want you to go to college. They want you to spend a bunch of money going to college.
Yeah, you know, my experience when I was a kid was like, you can do these things. You could learn a trade. You can start a business. But then it was like, great, I want to do that. And they're like, figure it out. You know what I mean? And I didn't feel like there was any like, there was... go to the college and there's a very laid out course of like steps A through Z. Like, here's what you need to do to get through college. But then with all the other stuff, it was like, well, I want to start a business. And they were like, yeah, you should, you know, but no one ever was like, okay, cool. Here's steps A through Z for starting a business, which I mean, that's what it sounds like you're doing with these business courses or what the intent is.
That's what we want to do with business goals group, or one of the things we want to do. So it's, you know, business goals group is full-scale business development. So, you know, web and software, branding, graphic design. You know, I do consulting. So if one of my clients wants to get themselves, they want to get a partnership or they want to get a new client, I help draft the proposal. Then, you know, this is how, you know, you want to pitch them, or I'll even be involved in helping, you know, the negotiation. So, you know, full-scale business development. But I don't want to stop there. I don't want to just do, you know, the websites and marketing and branding. I also, you know, want to help people learn how to start or scale their business or form partnerships, you know, and potentially, you know, I'm a good ways away from it, but, you know, maybe some VC stuff down the road, you know, maybe investing in startups, because the startup world is so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are every now and then I come across a startup and I'm like, I'd like to invest in that. I'm like, oh, it's in my budget right now.
Yeah, very cool. So is that, I say, is that all you're doing? Not to minimize it, like you're doing like four things, but what else do you have going on?
So I'm a chief digital officer of a company called Sosh Wallet. They're a startup out of Texas.
Okay.
And it's basically group banking. So it's the app integrates with any major bank. And it gives real-time visibility of the checking accounts, whether it's a church, a charity, parent-teacher association. You can see real-time access of how your money's being spent. So any group that's pulling money together, you can see how the organization's spending the money. And fraud is huge.
Right.
Like, there's treasurers of PTAs and charities that are very often, you know, getting caught stealing money.
Right.
So this is, it's fraud prevention. But it's also, you know, a community driver, because if I see how my money's being spent, I'm more likely going to donate more, you know, because right. I'm actually, I feel more involved.
I know where my tax dollars are going.
Yeah.
I feel better about it.
Sosh Wallet is they're really, really cool. It's a women owned and led company.
Okay.
They're some of the coolest bosses I've ever had.
Nice.
Shout out to Jen and Reka. I think they're a blockchain company too. And what was really fascinating to me when I first met them is almost every blockchain company is like, we've got this crypto token. Like, that's their whole thing, is their crypto token. And they're actually using blockchain how it should be used, just as a record keeping system.
Okay.
And, you know, an immutable record keeper. So that it can't be, you know, even if they can manage to somehow pull a string at the bank and make something happen, you can't fudge the blockchain network. And it's built on Ethereum, which a lot of people don't know this, but you can build just about any software on Ethereum through Amazon Web Services. So it's nothing to do with cryptocurrency. It's purely the blockchain network and its utility. So I work with Sosh Wallet. I've got a handful of other clients under Business Goals Group, like marketing and branding and things like that, public relations. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, that takes up pretty much all my time.
That's all.
Yeah.
Nice, man. No, that's awesome. What's your vision for like the next 5 years? I know you said you're trying to get into some investing and some other development, but I guess we'll start with the Oasis. What's your... Do you have, I mean, you got something, or you just got to do it?
Well, so the owner, he's a local entrepreneur. He has a lot of local businesses. He's partnered with the people that purchased the Vibe building, and they're renting it out to, I don't think I'm allowed to say what they're doing with it yet, but it's really cool what they're doing.
Cool.
Vibe building. But he's talked about doing a few different things. What I've suggested is do a co-working space / tap wine room. So people can go in and it's, you know, they can get, there's like three kegs of like local breweries, you know, Third Planet, Destin Brewery, St. Michael's. Those are my favorites.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just some Chautauqua, you know, wall with the bottles on it. That / co-working space.
Okay.
Because, you know, co-working space, there's co-working space in like Pensacola.
Right.
There's a little bit out in Destin, but Fort Walton doesn't really have any. And I think, you know, I told him, I was like, you know, I'll rent a cubicle in here, you know, because I'm doing everything from home right now. I told him, I was like, you know, like a tap room, wine room, co-working space. And he's thinking on it. He's using the building actually as his garage right now. He's got a lot of really nice cars in there. So the whole building, the Oasis is around, is like his garage.
Right on.
It's really cool watching him come and go, like go park one car and pull another one out.
Yeah.
And they're mostly like old school vintage, like he's got the same truck that he drove in high school.
Okay. And, that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, the Oasis, you know, I'd like to see it turned into something community focused, some type of co-working space or general meetup area for, you know, people to come. And that's what we're doing, like with the gallery night. And then the third Friday of every month is student and faculty night. So teachers and students can come and they can get discounted meals.
Okay.
And we're going to be putting, you know, some games and stuff out for them soon. With the Oasis, I really want to see it become more community driven, you know, something that people can congregate at, network at, and stuff like that.
And then what about for the, I guess the business side of things for all the digital stuff you're doing?
So with that, I'd really like to build a platform that helps people in a hard time figure out what kind of shift they need to make with their business, or if they're not scaling, figure out how to scale. Because I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been there with my food truck, a catering tent. I've been there with the business that I have now, Business Goals Group. And, you know, I found looking for people who have hit these walls and overcome them and applying, you know, what they did has helped me. And I really just want to do the same thing. Like, I'm not some business guru. I just read a lot and right. I see what other people have done that's worked for them and tried to apply it to me. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So it's not like there's a one size fits all with these things. But, yeah, sometimes I'll come across something and I do it. I'm like, wow, why wasn't I doing this before? And I want to help other people do that because I know, you know, how hard this is as a business owner. Small business runs America. You know, I mean, private, there's, you know, Walmart and the military and there's a lot of jobs there. But and this might have changed after COVID, but I know the statistic before COVID, it was like small business was like 60-70% of all jobs in America. And, you know, when you look at some of the direction that the things are going, it almost seems like people don't want small business. You know, it's almost like they're trying to chip away at it.
Yeah.
And it's just watching all the franchises come in and wash all the small mom and pop shops away.
Yeah.
You know, I like being able to go to, you know, Walmart's cool, but I like going to the tiny Asian market across town. I like going to the, you know, the bread store and stuff like that.
The big players are the convenience, right? Like, I don't have to go to four different places to do one job or cook one meal. Like, I can go and I can get my home maintenance stuff and I can get my, you know, decorations for Christmas and I can do all my shopping in the same store. But it definitely, like you said, it kind of erodes the local mom and pop shops, which is just more difficult. And those big stores can also, you know, like COVID hit, like Walmart's not going away because of COVID, but a small mom and pop store is. I mean, that was kind of how this podcast was developed. It was like, how do I help kind of give back to the community and like highlight these small businesses? I'm never going to go into Walmart and be like, hey, I have a podcast. Do you want to come on, you know, to any of the managers? Like, I'm just not interested. Not that the people there are bad people. They're also locals in our community, but I'm trying to help highlight and give back to the members that kind of make the community run. So
I'm gonna put on my tinfoil hat right now.
All right, send it.
it just seemed like when COVID happened, it was like, don't go outside or you're going to get arrested, bro.
Right.
You know, they were arresting people for kayaking and paddleboarding or trying to go to the gym or live a healthy life. It was like, stay inside, don't get sunlight, you know. It felt weird to me.
Yeah.
But regardless of whether there's conspiracy or anything involved with that, if everybody's shopping at Walmart and the Walmart shelves stop getting stocked, or if for any powers that be, any reason that they can conflict with that, there's, if everybody's going to the same place to get food and something happens, you know, they could be very bad. But if there's 50 shops across town that all have, you know, their own logistics and their own trade networks, it's a lot harder to create issues there.
Right.
So to me, you know, small business is not just, you know, a reflection of myself and seeing that in other families and wanting, you know, them to be able to take care of themselves, but also just as a community. I feel like small business is just so much more community driven and focused than, you know, the large franchise stores.
Right. Well, and it also helps prevent, I mean, you know, monopoly in the sense that one or two corporations can run everything and set prices, but it also is going to help prevent any government intervention that's unwanted because the government's going to have a harder time. I say the government, the larger entities are going to have a harder time buying out, you know, 50 small businesses to help try and set prices or price fixing versus if you have two entities, right? That it's like where the only places you can get goods. There doesn't have to be that much intervention to try and start fixing prices and stuff, or, you know, lab grown meats starting to like become popular and I'm seeing it, I'm like, I'm good. I'll pass. I'll eat a regular cow.
I would have tried the lab grown meat 5 years ago. I was vegan for a year, actually. Okay. When I first started the catering company, that's when I first tried to do vegan barbecue, and it was not working out. It fell on its face. I was like, oh, my business is not working out. And then I started going back to smoking pork butt and wings and stuff, yeah, and burgers. And then that's when it picked up.
Yeah.
But, whether there's creepy agendas there or not, like you were saying, like with monopolies, like how like Roosevelt came and he broke up the monopolies. Right. I think that was Roosevelt, right?
I don't remember.
Some president broke them up. But, being able to have an option, it's like that was the whole thing with us fighting communism, right? Like, we could have our own businesses, have our own products, freedom, everything wasn't all the same. Right. Yeah. Right. So, to me, it's a lot more than just work. It's also, American values and the American dream and what I think this country was founded on and what made us so great, yeah. So I really believe in small business. I really want to help promote it. If I see an entrepreneur or business owner, somebody that I can tell they're stressed because I've been in their shoes, I want to help them.
It's awesome. It's awesome, man. Well, yeah, hopefully this helps. You got a couple good shout outs on here. I meant to ask you at the beginning, by the way, where are you from originally?
I was born in Pensacola.
Oh, okay.
And nice. I grew up around here. Yeah, I went to Fort Walton Beach High School. I also went to Vernon. I lived in Carrieville. I went to Vernon for a little while.
Where's that?
Where Bonifay, Chipley.
Yeah.
It's out that area.
Oh, okay.
You never heard of Vernon, Florida?
Probably. I mean,
it got famous in the 70s because through the 50s and 60s, this is a town of 500 people.
Yeah.
They were insuring their body parts and then maiming themselves to claim the money. It was the biggest insurance fraud scheme ever. Insurance companies from around the country were going, why does this small town have such a high dismemberment claim rate? So they sent in private investigators. Come to find out, the preferred method was to cut off their least dominant arm,
yeah,
and they're the opposite leg, so they could still use a crutch and have an arm and a leg, but they, they'd get buku money back in those days and go buy a big piece of property and a house and
other money. Wild.
Yeah, so it got deemed the nub capital. Errol Morris made a documentary about it. It was on Netflix for a while. I highly recommend it. Still, it's on YouTube. So I highly recommend checking it out. Vernon, Florida. There's something in the water out there. But,
That's funny, man. No, I've never heard that before. I gotta look into that, though. That's awesome. Well, good for them, You gotta be creative when your times are hard and you need money.
Yeah.
Don't insure your body parts and cut them off. Ill-advised. Cool, man. Well, I'll let you run. You've been a lifelong resident here, so, if someone was coming down to visit or if they're looking to move here, obviously you're an advocate for small businesses, but what are some of your top places you'd recommend people go check out?
Like I said, I really like Fred Gannon State Park.
Yeah.
I don't know who was recording when I mentioned that. It's like my favorite place in the world, like kayaking and hiking.
That's up in Niceville for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah. Definitely this is the nature here. Our beaches, any Okaloosa Island, Santa Rosa Island, all along Pensacola Beach, Navarre Beach, Okaloosa Island, Destin, just, 30A, Rosemary Beach. Just that whole stretch is just, it's pristine to me. So our beaches are just unparalleled. Our wildlife, there's a lot of people know this. We actually have like more bald eagles than almost anywhere in the country. I think the only place that has more than us is like Alaska. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of bald eagles out in, along Santa Rosa Island. So real big on wildlife. We have great food industry. Like if you go to Dewey Destin's or Harbor Docks, you're getting fresh local caught seafood. These restaurants have their own fishing fleets.
Some of these places too, you can go fish for the day and bring your own catch. I know Dewey Destin's will cook your catch. So you go out, fish, bring it in, and they'll cook it up for you.
Yeah, how cool is that?
That's
So big shout out to Dewey Destin's, Harbor Docks, the local food industry that serves real local food. We have a great food scene. We have great nature. I think we have a great, even though I was talking about colleges earlier, Northwest Florida State College, yeah. Or wait, is it still, didn't they change the name of it?
Or something? Not that I'm aware of.
It's a great school. It's a great campus. And then, you know, University of West Florida in Pensacola, like their Center for Entrepreneurship, they are huge on entrepreneurship out there. And especially helping veterans get out of the military and kind of do their own thing.
Yeah.
Because I know vets will really struggle with going from like the military to like a civilian career where they're just like, where's the structure? Where's, you guys are doing this wrong. Right. Like,
it's different.
Yeah. So I know that's a big thing. But yeah, we have a great community for retiring military. People are really, really big here on that. So anybody looking to retire in the military, settle down somewhere, this is a phenomenal area for that. There's a lot of great community focused establishments like Doolittle Institute in Niceville. You know, their seminars and events they put on, which I lived in Niceville. This is like before COVID. I haven't heard from them or gone to any of their events in recent years. So I don't know what they're up to now, but I know before 2020, they were doing a lot of really cool things. I went and saw Rodney Mullins out there,
nice.
My godfather skateboarding. we're just a great community. We have some of the best wildlife and nature you can view in the world. We have world-class restaurants. I didn't mention McGuire's.
McGuire's is awesome. I love McGuire's.
Miss Callahan's.
I never went
to Callahan's. Oh, that was the best place. That was like my favorite restaurant. Okay. Still is. I'm so upset they closed. This is a great area to raise a family in, a great area to start a business in. You know, we have good schools. We have a lot to offer. So anybody that's thinking about moving here, definitely look into everything we have to offer.
And call me.
Yeah, call Micah.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate your time. Like I said, I got to run, but thanks for coming out. Definitely do it again.
Yeah, for sure, man. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.